Help it. He fell to the ground. What is it? Cheyenne yelled. Her hands swam through the air, looking for him. Griffin? What's wrong? The pain was so great that he couldn't speak. Hot tears ran down his cheeks. He pushed himself up on his elbows. His left foot was still half in the hole he had stepped in, some animal's small burrow, but his leg was now facing a completely different direction. Griffin? Cheyenne's voice broke. Her unseeing eyes were wide as she turned her head from side to side. It's my ankle, he managed to grunt. I stepped in a hole, and I think I broke it. Invisible knives were slicing his tendons and nerves. Griffin didn't mean to, but when he pulled his foot free of the hole, he let out another scream. It dangled at the end of his leg like a shoe he had half kicked off, but this was his foot. Panting, Griffin pulled up his pants leg, ignoring the fresh waves of agony, even though part of him didn't want to know how damaged it was. Cheyenne found his shoulder and crouched beside him. How bad is it?
Bad. My foot's pointing the wrong way.
Is it bleeding?
No, but I think at least one of the bones in my ankle is broken.
What are we going to do? Cheyenne's face was creased with concern. It was hard to think. Griffin realized he was moaning faintly at the end of every breath.
Here, help me get up. If I can lean on you, maybe I can hop on my good leg. I'm going to have to be your eyes, and you're going to have to help be my leg.
Cheyenne leaned down. Putting her hands around his wrists, she began to pull while Griffin tried to stand on just his right leg. She was overbalanced, in danger of toppling onto him. He got nearly all the way up and then lurched forward. His left foot touched the ground. A bolt of electricity jolted its way up his leg, burning every nerve. With a cry, he fell back on the ground, pulling Cheyenne over on top of him. He let out another scream when some part of her pressed against his ankle. He was in too much pain to be ashamed. She rolled off him so they were lying next to each other on the icy ground. For a second, there was just the sound of their breathing. He made himself face the facts.
I can't do it, Cheyenne. You'll have to go on your own.
She propped herself on one elbow. I am not leaving you here. You could freeze to death. I can already hear your teeth chattering.
It's nothing. Just from the shock, that's all.
He was vaguely aware of the cold and wet seeping through his pants.
Look, we're only about a mile or two from the main road. I can point you in the right direction. Just keep walking in a straight line, and you should get there in less than an hour. That's not enough time for anything bad to happen to me. Face it, there's no way I can put any weight on my leg. Even if I manage to get to my feet, I can't hop for 2 miles. You go out to the road and flag somebody down. Then you can come back for me.
She trailed her fingers up his chest until she found his face, then cupped his cheek.
But if they find you, they might kill you for helping me.
But they won't know that I was helping you.
He had to speak through gritted teeth as the pain seared up his leg and into his brain.
I'll just tell them I was looking for you, and then I'll say I saw tracks going in the completely opposite direction.
No!
She shook her head, her upper lip curled.
No way!
She grabbed one of his hands and half stood.
I can't leave you here. You have to come with me. Come on, just try getting up again. You gave up too soon.
Her face was so white. A blue vein fluttered in her temple.
Cheyenne,
he hardened his voice.
I can't. If either one of us is going to survive, you have to get to that road as soon as possible.
28. $250,000, 2 guns, and a dead man.
Griffin was so cold. His whole body vibrated, and each time he shivered, it ran down his leg to his ankle.
It felt like the ends of the bone were grating together, but he couldn't stop shaking. He remembered shaking like this in the burn unit.
The nurses had told him it was shock and then wrapped the unburned parts of his body in white blankets warm from a special dryer. He tried to tense his body so that he would stop shaking, but it didn't help. Every shiver was echoed by a wave of pain that radiated from his ankle to his pelvis. Trying to conserve the little heat he had, Griffin curled on his side. But he was still just as cold, if not worse, and now a new side of him was wet. The backs of his clothes were already stiffening with ice. He didn't know how long he lay there before something roused him out of himself. At first, Griffin thought he was imagining it, but then he definitely heard something. He corrected the thought. Someone. Moving through the forest, and voices, too. He couldn't make out any words, but the tones were familiar. Jimbo and TJ. Arguing. That was familiar, too.
"We just go back to the house and take the truck and go," said Jimbo. "Go before Roy has a chance to rethink this. Screw them. We've got our money."
"But where are we supposed to go?"
TJ sounded confused.
"Don't you get it? There isn't any more supposed to. We can do what we want. We each have $250,000. I think I'm going to Brazil. I've always wanted to go to Carnival."
"What about TJ?"
"What about you?"
Jimbo echoed.
"Am I going with you?"
Jimbo didn't say anything for a few seconds. Then he said,
"Maybe it's time we did things on our own."
"Hey!" Griffin yelled. "Hey!" He levered himself up on one elbow, ignoring how much it hurt to move.
"What the hell was that?"
TJ sounded spooked.
"It's Griffin, dummy," Jimbo said. "Hey, Griff, where are you?"
"Over here. I'm hurt."
A few seconds later, they were standing over him.
"Well, well, well. What happened here?"
Jimbo seemed to be dressed in every coat he owned. He stood with one fist on his hip, the other hand held a rifle. TJ stood two paces behind, holding his own gun.
"I'm hurt. I was trying to track Cheyenne down when I stepped into a hole."
Griffin pointed.
"My ankle's broken."
He looked past them.
"Where's my dad?"
"Driving the roads looking for her,"
TJ said. Turning to Jimbo, he took a cell phone from his pocket.
"Should we call Roy?"
"You're going to have to call someone," Griffin said. "I can't walk. You need to get someone out here to help me." "Hold on a minute, Tej."
Jimbo cocked his head.
"Where's Cheyenne?"
"She hit me in the head and knocked me out. Didn't you see my note?"
"We saw the note."
TJ leaned closer to look at Griffin's ankle. He shook his head.
"Did you find her?"
"I was getting close right before I stepped into the hole. I could hear her over there."
Griffin pointed in the opposite direction from the way Cheyenne had gone.
"But before you go looking for her, could you call my dad?" "He's busy, like we are,"
Jimbo said,
"trying to find the stupid girl you let slip through your fingers."
Griffin didn't like the way this was going.
"Then could you carry me out? I can't put any weight on my foot at all."
TJ stretched his free hand in Griffin's direction, but Jimbo touched his arm and he stopped. Then Jimbo pointed at something with the nose of his rifle.
"What's that?"
Griffin looked down. Lying next to him was the striped scarf Cheyenne had worn around her neck. It must have come off when she lost her balance and fell, trying to help him up.
I don't know."
"Hey, that's Cheyenne's,"
TJ said slowly.
"I thought you said you didn't catch up to her."
"I didn't."
It seemed painfully clear he was lying.
"She just dropped it here and I found it."
It made sense, but he should have said it first thing. Now they would figure out he had let her go.
"You just found it,"
Jimbo said.
"Lying in the bushes?"
"Yeah. That's how I knew I was getting close."
"Okay, Griff. What really happened? Did you get her back for whacking you upside the head?"
Jimbo grinned.
"I guess the apple doesn't fall far from the tree."
He looked around.
"So where did you put her?"
"What are you talking about?"
TJ shook his head.
Never mind, he said. It's nothing you need to know.
Jimbo looked back at Griffin, a sly grin playing across his face.
Where do you think your mama's been all these years?
Chicago, Griffin said. But when he said the word out loud, it seemed silly somehow.
With her family.
He had always wondered if she had remarried. Maybe had another family, a kid who didn't have scars.
I told you, don't tell him, TJ said urgently. He doesn't need to know.
Jimbo didn't pay any attention.
Chicago,
he echoed Griffin sarcastically.
Uh-huh. Eating deep dish pizza and listening to jazz?
Why?
Griffin sat all the way up, ignoring the screaming pain in his leg.
Is she, like, in Portland or something?
Portland, that's a good one,
Jimbo muttered.
Portland.
TJ sighed.
She's been out in the back, Griffin. Underneath a Honda quarter panel. We buried her out there. What?
Griffin didn't even feel shock. He just felt nothing. Like he was falling and there would never be anything to catch him.
Roy's always had a temper, you know that,
Jimbo said, shrugging.
Well, things went crossways between him and Janie when you were in the hospital. She was always ragging on him about you getting burned, and one night he gave her a little shove when she had been getting into his face. She tripped and her head hit the fireplace. He left her there to teach her a lesson and went to bed. And when he got up, she was stone cold dead.
No,
Griffin said. He shook his head violently, not caring that it might jostle his leg.
No!
Even though he could picture it in his head, even though he could see it more clearly than he could see Jimbo and TJ. He started to stand, needing to get to his feet, and then fell back with a cry. His mother was dead?
Look at him,
Jimbo said in a flat, unaccented voice, like a hypnotist's.
If we leave him here, then how long is he going to last? I mean, look at him.
TJ turned, and together the two men regarded Griffin as calmly as if he were something they had found by the side of the road.
His skin's already kind of blue. We'll just tell Roy we never saw him and let nature take its course. And that way we'll know he'll never tell anybody about the money.
It was like Griffin wasn't even there. TJ cocked his head to one side.
But what about Roy?
That's not our problem, dummy, Jimbo said. If he wants to come out in the woods and start looking, then so be it. We'll be long gone by then.
You're just going to let him freeze to death?
TJ seemed to have finally grasped what Jimbo was saying.
He's already halfway there,
Jimbo said calmly.
Why do we have to intervene?
Griffin thought it couldn't get much worse. But his blood turned to ice at TJ's next words.
Jeez. If I had a dog like that, I'd shoot him.
TJ pointed his handgun at Griffin's midsection. Griffin froze. Jimbo pushed the barrel of the gun aside.
Don't be stupid. You do that, they'll go looking for who shot him. You leave him just like he is, and it will be clear what happened. He caught his foot in a hole, he broke his ankle, and he died. End of story. Nobody asks any questions, and nobody's in trouble.
I'm not stupid. We'll bury him out here. I'm tired of you saying I'm stupid.
Griffin's hand closed on a fist-sized rock. It was ridiculous, like using a slingshot against a bazooka, but he wasn't going to die just lying on his back on the icy ground.
I told you,
TJ repeated when Jimbo didn't respond.
Don't call me stupid.
Why not? It's the truth.
Jimbo shrugged.
You are stupid. It's way too much work to bury him, but that's just like you. You never think things through.
Then a gun went off, and Griffin's heart stopped. But it was Jimbo who collapsed on the pine needles.
There!
TJ said. Who's stupid now? Who's stupid now, Jimbo?
He was breathing hard. Griffin's ears were ringing. He did not move a muscle.
He was dead now. It was only a matter of time until TJ made it official.
But then TJ dropped the gun and leaned over, his hands on his knees. Vomit splattered on the pine needles. Griffin cut his eyes toward Jimbo and then wished he hadn't. He adjusted his head a couple of inches so that he wouldn't accidentally see the body again. Straightening up, TJ wiped the back of his mouth with his hand.
I've never done that before, he said. It's different than you think.
Griffin was afraid to even meet TJ's eyes. When he finally did, he saw TJ's pupils looked too big. And his face looked like he was about ready to laugh or cry, or both.
Oh well, TJ said. There is one good thing. Jimbo finally shut up.
His laugh was high-pitched. It sounded like glass breaking. Griffin heard TJ go over to the body, but he still refused to look. Jimbo had landed on his side. He heard TJ pull the backpack off Jimbo's back. TJ walked back into Griffin's line of sight.
It's half yours, he said, hefting the backpack.
That's okay. I don't need any.
TJ unzipped the backpack. There was a long silence.
It's wet. Why is the money all wet?
His voice arced higher. He reached in and grabbed a fistful of money, pulled it out. Red drops speckled the snow.
It's blood. Oh my God, it's blood!
He dropped the money and then the backpack. A bill floated down and landed by Griffin's hand. One end of it looked like it had been dipped in red paint. TJ found a little patch of snow. He knelt down and began to wipe his hands on it like it was a towel, washing his hands in snow. It quickly turned slushy and pink. And then he stood up, without saying another word to Griffin, and walked away. Leaving Griffin with a broken ankle, a bloody backpack filled with $250,000, two guns, and a dead man. 29. The hardest thing in the world. Crouched behind a huge tree, Cheyenne tried to be as quiet as possible. She was too winded to hold her breath, so she panted shallowly, open-mouthed. The cold air scraped her lungs. Her eyes watered, but she refused to cough. Any second, they would find her. 30 minutes ago, she had heard the sound of a gunshot. Not close, but not far away either. It had spurred her to walk even faster. Then, 5 minutes ago, she had heard the faint sound of a car engine. She must be near the road. That meant there were people up ahead, people who could help her. And then this whole long ordeal would be over. She had hurried forward, mindless of branches that lashed her legs, of ground so rough she stumbled and nearly fell a half dozen times. Her only thought had been to flag down the driver, even though part of her knew that he was surely long gone. But then she had heard it. Someone running through the trees, running right for her. And who else would be out in the woods? The driver of the car wouldn't suddenly get out because he wouldn't have any idea she was here. It must be one of the three men. She had gotten lucky when Griffin had turned out to be one of the good guys. She didn't think she would get lucky twice. So Cheyenne had hidden behind the biggest tree she could find and concentrated on remaining absolutely still. It was the hardest thing in the world. She wanted to jump up and start waving her arms and screaming, just to get the inevitable over with. Was her killer even now aiming a gun at her? Cheyenne tried to think of a plan. Knowing she was probably going to die gave her a certain amount of freedom. Maybe she could rush whoever it was, TJ, Jimbo, or Roy, and wrestle the gun away before he overcame his amazement at her suicidal charge. Although it was more likely that she would just end up with a fist-sized hole in her chest. Still, something inside of her refused to give up. Not after she had gotten so far, risked so much, done so many things she would have said were impossible just a week earlier.
Then words rang out through the cold, still air.
Freeze! Police, hold her right there!
An electric shock jolted from Cheyenne's head to her heels.
Not the bad guys, then. Cheyenne was going to live. She had made it.
She didn't obey the cop. She couldn't. She stood up and ran toward his voice, heedless of what might be in her way.
Help me! Oh, please help me!
Something sharp tore through her pants, gouging her left calf. Shaking herself free, she ran on, holding her hands high overhead so he would know she didn't constitute a threat. Her only goal was to close the gap between herself and the cop as fast as she could. She wanted to finally be safe.
Help me! She yelled again. I've been kidnapped!
A firm hand gripped her shoulder.
Slow down there, little lady. What are you saying?
There was a faint sound of amusement in the cop's rough voice. Did he think she was playing some kind of game?
I'm Cheyenne Wilder. I was kidnapped from the Woodlands Experience shopping mall 2 days ago.
Wait a minute. They mentioned you at roll call this morning. Are you really Cheyenne Wilder? The daughter of Nike's president?
She could feel him inspecting her. Cheyenne imagined how she must look, her clothes muddy and torn, her face scratched, and her tangled curls filled with old leaves, pine needles, and broken sticks. But her appearance would serve as proof. The only way anyone could look the way she did was if she had been running blind through the woods all night long.
Jeez, he said, half to himself.
His voice was hoarse, like he was just getting over a cold.
I'm out looking for people jacking deer, and instead I find the girl they're searching for in 3 states.
She heard his feet shift, and she imagined him looking around.
Where are these guys? Did they follow you?
No. I was so afraid.
A little sigh escaped her now that she could let go of her fear.
I was so afraid you were one of them. I thought they had finally found me.
He let out a 2-note laugh.
Don't worry. I've got you now. You're safe. I'd better call in with the good news.
She heard him punch some buttons.
Guess who I've got? Cheyenne Wilder. And she appears to be in good condition. Over.
She could hear a faint, tinny voice, but couldn't make out the words.
Roger that, the cop said. You can stop searching for her.
Let me talk to my father, she begged, holding out her empty hand. Please.
Oh, he's not at my station, Cheyenne.
Then the cop spoke to the voice at the other end of the line.
Could you get in contact with Mr. Wilder and have him ring me back? Someone here would very much like to speak to him. Meanwhile, I'm bringing her in, over and out.
His voice changed, and she could tell he was talking to her again.
My car's about a 30 miles down the road. Do you think you could walk there if I guided you?
I just made it through the woods. A road's no problem.
There was no way Cheyenne was going to let the cop get more than 5 feet from her. She couldn't stand the idea of being alone, even for a second. What if one of the men popped out of the woods behind her while she was waiting? He took her elbow, and they began to walk. They hadn't gone more than 100 paces when their feet crunched on gravel, and then, a few steps later, on smooth blacktop. They had reached the road. So Cheyenne hadn't been imagining it when she thought she heard a car. If the cop hadn't come along, she still might have been able to flag down someone. At least now she didn't have to worry about getting accidentally run over in the process.
You said you escaped the men who kidnapped you. How did you do that? Did you have help?
Cheyenne stopped in her tracks, causing the man to bump into her.
Oh my God, I should have told you right away. You need to call out a search party. This guy, Griffin, is out in the woods someplace. He's hurt. He told me to go on without him, and he would draw them away.
Turning, she put her free hand on the cop's wrist.
He needs medical attention immediately.
She tried not to think of him dead. But immediately she saw Griffin in her mind's eye, as clearly as she had seen him when they had been talking in his bedroom. He lay flat on his back on the frozen ground, his skin as pale as wax, his wide eyes staring up at the gray sky.
He's alive, Cheyenne scolded herself. He's alive, and you'd better start laying the groundwork with the police now. If not for acquittal, then maybe probation.
Griffin's just this kid who lives at the house where I was being held. His father was the one who demanded the ransom money, and there were two other men there. Griffin protected me from them.
Cheyenne felt her cheeks get hot. Would he think she had been raped?
He kept me safe. But the men decided they weren't going to let me go, in case I could identify them. Griffin found out what they were planning, so he helped me get away.
Cheyenne decided not to mention who had kidnapped her, hoping it might help Griffin.
Please, please, you have to ask them to go out and find him.
Are his injuries life-threatening?
There was a strange note in the cop's voice.
No, but his ankle is broken, so he can't walk. You need to find him soon, before he freezes to death.
We'll handle that once we get back to the station.
The cop didn't sound too forgiving. Cheyenne hoped whoever really decided these things would look more favorably on Griffin.
All right. Here's the car.
His steps slowed, and he led her back onto the gravel.
I've never ridden in a cop car before.
I'm afraid you're still going to miss your chance. We use private vehicles when we work undercover.
He opened the door and guided her in, his hand on the small of her back. She sat on the front bench seat. Inside, it smelled like cigarettes and fast food. Her feet scuffled wrappers and hard things that clunked. Some kind of tools? Before finding a place to rest. She heard the cop get in the other side and close the door, felt his weight settle in beside her.
So are you taking me home?
Back to the station. Your dad will meet us there. We need to, debrief you.
There was something slightly off about his voice. Everything was slightly off, Cheyenne realized. She sniffed. Inside the confines of the car, she could smell something familiar about the cop. She sniffed again. It was the sharp, medicinal smell of peppermint overlaying the earthy smell of tobacco. 30. Nothing like a toy.
Oh, no.
Cheyenne flashed back to a hard voice demanding all her phone numbers. Griffin's dad had smelled like that. Roy hadn't needed to change his appearance. He just changed his voice, pitching it lower. But what he couldn't change was his smell. Cheyenne knew Roy was going to drive her to her death. Shoot her here and he might attract attention. Plus, he would be left with a bloody mess in his car. He must be planning to drive her to the house, all the while chattering about what they would do back at the station. She remembered the cell phone he had been using.
Maybe she could snatch it and call 911. Maybe if she was really lucky, he wouldn't notice that she had it and she could hold it behind her back while she pressed the numbers. She might even buy a second or two before he heard the voice of the operator or noticed what she was doing.
It was hopeless. But what else could she do? If she got out and ran, he would tackle her in a moment and drag her back. Give up on all pretense. The engine started up. Cheyenne swept her left hand over the seat between them. Her fingers closed over what they found. Only it wasn't a phone. It was a gun.
Hey!
Roy sounded surprised. Too surprised to keep using his phony voice. Cheyenne transferred the gun to her right hand. It wasn't very big, but it felt very heavy and real and nothing like a toy. Did it have a safety?
You make one move and I'll shoot you.
She had wanted to make her voice full of authority, unwavering. Instead, it came out high-pitched and shaking. Roy's only answer was a laugh. Something streaked across the small slice of vision Cheyenne still had left. Roy's hand, trying to grab the gun from her. Her finger tightened on the trigger just as his hand closed around her fist. The sound of the gun firing was so loud that it sucked all other sounds after it. And then the silence was broken by Roy's scream.
You shot me!
He sounded more affronted than injured. How badly was he hurt? Bad enough that he would die? Or not bad enough to keep him from hurting her? Cheyenne realized she was still holding the gun.
Get out!
she screamed.
What?
Get out of the car, or I'll shoot you again.
She pressed the gun forward until it touched flesh, wet flesh.
Okay, okay.
She heard the door open and Roy scramble out. An oof as he fell onto the road. Still holding the gun, Cheyenne leaned forward, found the door handle, and yanked it closed. A second later, she snapped down the lock, just before Roy grabbed the handle from the outside. Now that the gun barrel was no longer dimpling his flesh, he was obviously rethinking having left the car, and he wanted back in.
The other door!
Cheyenne leaned to her right, found the lock just in time. Her hand was sticky. It must be blood. The passenger door rattled.
Let me in, Cheyenne!
No!
Come on, I'm hurt! I need to get to a doctor. Let me in and I'll drive us to a hospital and let you go.
Where had she shot him? Cheyenne didn't know. His arm? His belly? His chest? It seemed quite possible that Roy was telling the truth. Maybe he did need to get to a hospital.
Cheyenne! I'm going to bleed to death. Please, for the love of God!
Slowly, she raised her hand. He must have come back to the other side of the car, because suddenly the driver's side door began to jiggle, making her jump.
Let me in, Cheyenne!
His voice was louder and angrier now.
Let me in or you'll be sorry!
Or maybe she had just nicked him. A sudden loud bang right next to her ear made her scream. It happened again. Roy was, Cheyenne realized, hammering the window with a rock. A big rock. The third time he did it, the thump sounded more muffled. It was followed by a curse and the sound of the rock falling to the ground. He had smashed his own fingers instead of the window. Good. Cheyenne pressed the tip of the gun up against the glass near where she thought Roy was. She pressed hard to try to keep her hand from shaking. Stop doing that or I'll shoot you again!
Really?
Roy laughed.
I don't think so. You'll miss me by a mile, or maybe the bullet will ricochet and hit you. So go ahead.
And then he smashed the rock down again. 31. Driving blind. As she pressed the nose of the gun against the window, Cheyenne realized Roy was right. Even if the bullet didn't ricochet, and she wasn't quite sure how that worked, even if it did go through the window, wouldn't she still be cut by flying glass? And Roy probably wouldn't even be hurt. All she would accomplish would be to create a huge gaping hole. And then he could get her. Frustrated and afraid, Cheyenne started to cry. The rock banged against the window again, making her jump. Her foot touched the accelerator, and the car engine raced. She had to do something, but what? Then she had a sudden memory. Her mom sitting beside her, letting Cheyenne drive around the empty, winding roads of a nearby cemetery on a damp Saturday afternoon. Could she just drive away? Another bang. It was only a matter of time before the window cracked and then broke.
Okay. She could do this. The engine was still on.
Cheyenne turned in the seat and set down the gun. Her hands gripped the steering wheel so tightly that it cut into her fingers. She quickly rehearsed what she remembered. The accelerator was on the right, the brake on the left. But wait. The car was clearly in park now, and Cheyenne needed it to be in drive. But the one car she had driven had been an automatic. What if this was a stick? She had no idea how to use a clutch. Leaning forward, Cheyenne felt to her right. No gear shift knob, just the hump in the middle of the floor. The car must be an automatic, but where was the lever to change gears? The rock banged down again. Another flash of memory. Her grandma's old car, so old it didn't have seat belts, and the shifter was on top of the steering wheel. Sending up a silent prayer, Cheyenne pushed down one of the wands branching off the steering column. In answer, a sweeping sound. The windshield wipers. Hey! Roy yelled. Hey! She pushed the lever back up. The second wand felt thicker. It shifted down a notch with a satisfying clunk. Then the car moved all right, but it bumped backward. Cheyenne jammed both feet on the brake.
Hey!
Roy yelled again.
What the hell do you think you're doing?
What was she doing? This was ridiculous. Maybe she should just give up. She saw movement in her sliver of vision, so it wasn't a surprise when the rock slammed down on the window again. Only this time, Cheyenne thought she heard a cracking sound. She pulled the knob down one more notch. Nothing. A third notch. The car jerked forward. Even though her foot wasn't on the accelerator, it was moving. The front tires crunched over the gravel and rolled onto the smooth surface of the road. Roy was still yelling, but Cheyenne ignored him. She concentrated on straightening out the car, driving only by sound, so that all four tires were on the road. Only then did she gingerly put her foot on the accelerator. She was too afraid to go fast. If she went off the road and ran into a tree, then Roy would be free to do whatever he wanted to her. Her left front tire chattered in gravel. She jerked the wheel, heard Roy curse on the other side of the window. When the right tire left the road, she corrected more gently. Outside, she could hear Roy's footfalls. First, he was walking beside her, and then running. Each of his steps spurred her to press the pedal a millimeter farther down. When a tire left the road, she adjusted the steering wheel infinitesimally, and then Roy began to fall back. Cheyenne was just starting to let herself hope when a new sound made her jump. It was the electronic shrill of a cell phone. What should she do? She felt paralyzed. Who could be calling Roy? TJ? Jimbo? Some friend of Roy's? Whoever it was, she was sure the kind of people who would call Roy would not be the kind to come to her rescue. There was no point in answering it. Without thinking about it, Cheyenne had lifted her foot off the accelerator. The car began slowing down until it was barely moving. Then Cheyenne realized something. Once whoever was on the line hung up, she could use the phone to dial 911. But to do that, she had to find it. As she was turning her head, trying to get a fix on the sound, the phone gave one last bleat and then stopped. The ringing seemed to have come from the floor of the car. Putting her foot on the brake, she began to rake her fingers through the crumpled papers that littered the floor. She found a wrench, a screwdriver, some tool she couldn't identify. Finally, her fingers closed around the phone. It was the same bulky phone Roy had handed her the day before. She had just pressed the number 9 when she heard another sound. Roy's footsteps. Running, but with an odd, hitching gait. Listening to them, Cheyenne knew for sure that she had shot him. All the same, he was catching up with her. She pressed the 1 key twice, then several buttons before she finally found the send key and heard the tones as it went through. Holding it between her ear and shoulder, the bulky size was actually useful, she grabbed the steering wheel. 911, a woman's voice. The rock slammed down on the window again. Cheyenne thought she felt a tiny pebble of glass bounce off her cheek. I need the police. Oh, please hurry. She began to inch the car forward again, but she knew she could never go fast enough. What is the nature of your emergency? The words ran out of her like water bursting from a dam. My name's Cheyenne Wilder, and I've been kidnapped, and now I'm in a car, and I've locked the doors, but the kidnapper is outside, and he's trying to smash open the window with a rock. Does he have a weapon? The woman's voice was still calm. Just the rock, but the window's starting to crack. Do you have the keys? Yes. Can you drive away?
I'm trying, but the thing is, I'm blind.
Blind? The dispatcher took a deep breath.
Okay. Tell me where you are, Cheyenne.
That's the thing. I don't know.
This time, when the rock crashed down, there was a splintery sound. The window was cracking. She had to get away. Cheyenne pressed the accelerator a little farther. The right front crunched on gravel. She adjusted, but not enough. The right rear tire had left the road as well. She angled away from the sound.
I'm somewhere within an hour's drive of the Woodlands Experience Shopping Center. I'm on a road next to some woods. It's paved and has gravel shoulders, and it's quiet. I've only heard one car in the past half hour.
Okay, I can see which cell phone tower is relaying your call. That narrows it down, but not enough. We've still got a 5-mile radius to cover. I'm alerting all units in your area to see if they can find you. Cheyenne heard her relay instructions. Another blow smashed the window. Cracks spread, making a sound like cellophane uncrinkling.
Cheyenne!
Roy howled.
Cheyenne!
Is that him? A hint of shock crept into the dispatcher's carefully dispassionate voice.
Yes, Cheyenne panted. Please hurry.
We're coming, Cheyenne. After an endless stretch of time that was probably less than a minute, something wailed faintly in the distance.
Wait, I hear a siren.
From which direction? I've got 4 cars, but they are spread over a pretty wide area.
I think south, but I'm not sure.
Cheyenne thought of something.
Can you ask them to turn on their sirens one at a time?
Yes, but what? And then understanding broke. Yes! Hang on, I'll ask them to go one at a time, and you tell me which one you hear. Car 1, the dispatcher said. Silence.
Nothing, Cheyenne said.
She was afraid she wouldn't be able to hear, so she lifted her foot from the accelerator. With one hand, Cheyenne reached over and ran her fingers over the pane. It felt like a web of pebbles. The rock smashed down again just as she was touching the glass, and suddenly there was cold air pouring into the car. The hole was only as big as a dime, but she knew that wouldn't last. Car 2.
Still nothing.
Cheyenne had never felt more alone in her life. Car 3. And finally she heard its wail.
That's it, and it sounds closer than it did before.
Got it, the dispatcher said triumphantly. We're coming. Then a hand punched through the window and circled her throat, squeezing Cheyenne back against the headrest. The phone fell to the floor of the car.
Where was the gun?
She didn't remember, and when she swept her hand over the seat, she couldn't find it. Roy's hand tightened. She couldn't scream. She couldn't even breathe. But she could hear the wail of the siren getting louder. Scrabbling desperately, Cheyenne found the piece of glass in her pocket. She grabbed it, ignoring how it sliced her thumb, and dragged it across the back of his hand. Roy cursed, then let go of her throat and pried the piece of glass away from her. It was slick with blood, his and hers, and she couldn't hold on. Then Roy's hand was back, like a steel band around her throat.
She was going to die just seconds before being rescued. No, no, she couldn't die. Not now. Maybe if she started driving again, he would have to let her go.
One hand found the wheel as her foot pressed the accelerator. Then there was a thump and a scream, and Roy's hand was gone, and she felt the rear tire go over something. Cheyenne heard a car screeching to a stop behind her. The siren cut out. 2 doors were flung open. A man's voice called out,
"Stop! Police! Stay on the ground!"
Footsteps ran toward her.
"Cheyenne, it's the police," a second man said. "You're safe now."
Cheyenne didn't move for a long moment. Then she said,
"Let me feel your badge."
Her foot was on the brake, but she could pivot it to the accelerator at any time.
"What?"
"Didn't they tell you I'm blind? Let me feel your badge. The man who just tried to kill me told me he was a cop."
Cheyenne held out her left hand next to the hole, but she kept her right hand on the steering wheel. She heard him fumble, and then he pressed the badge into her hand. Cheyenne ran her thumb across the raised letters. With a trembling hand, she turned off the engine.
"What took you so long?"
she whispered. 32. Just a friend? 2 weeks later, the phone rang just as Cheyenne finished pouring hot water into her cocoa. She answered it. "Hello?" There was a silence at the end of the line. Then a voice said hesitantly, "Cheyenne?" Suddenly, she was wide awake. Even though she had only gotten 4 hours sleep the night before, she was still having trouble sleeping.
"Who is it, Cheyenne?"
Danielle called from the living room. Danielle and Cheyenne's dad were watching a football game. "Just a second," Cheyenne said into the phone and then called out.
"It's just a friend."
Leaving the cocoa on the counter, she walked down the hall to her room and closed the door.
What do you want?
She leaned her forehead against the cool wood of the door. Griffin's voice was very soft.
I was calling to wish you a happy new year.
How did you get my number?
Cheyenne realized she was trembling. Sensing her emotions, Phantom got up from his bed on the floor and rubbed against her thigh. She steadied herself by resting her hand on the back of his neck.
You gave it to my dad, remember? Twice.
Didn't you think I might be trying to forget?
I'm sorry.
Griffin's voice suddenly sounded younger and much less certain.
I'll let you go.
Cheyenne didn't mean to say them, but the words burst out of her.
No, wait!
She took a deep breath.
Are you calling from Chicago?
So you heard about that? Yeah, they put me with my mom's sister and her family. They say I met Aunt Debbie when I was 3, but I don't remember it. Nobody liked Roy much, so I guess my mom stayed away after that.
At the thought of Roy, Cheyenne felt her lip curl.
I guess they were right.
Yeah.
Griffin sighed.
I spent all those years thinking Mom must be mad at me. I still can't believe she's dead.
Cheyenne had heard about the deaths. Griffin's mom's 7 years ago, and then Jimbo's in the woods.
Have you talked to your dad?
Cheyenne couldn't stand to think of Roy. It worked only if she thought of him as Griffin's dad. She had run over his lower legs with her back tires, fracturing both of them. She had also shot him in the side, but the bullet had only grazed him, missing anything vital. Her dad had told Cheyenne that Roy had been charged with kidnapping, assault, and second-degree murder. Pending a mental health evaluation, TJ faced a dozen charges, including murder. Griffin had agreed to cooperate with authorities.
No, Griffin said. I'm not allowed to. In fact, they don't even know I'm calling you. I'm sure they would freak out if they knew we were talking.
Ditto, Cheyenne said softly.
I called from a payphone in case your stepmom or dad answered, so they wouldn't see my aunt's name on the caller ID.
Cheyenne had tried to explain it to them, but it was clear that Danielle and Nick were more comfortable thinking of Griffin as the bad guy who had kidnapped their daughter. They didn't like to talk about how Cheyenne had done her best to kill Griffin or how he had saved her in the woods.
Guess who's in our backyard right now?
There was a pause. Then Griffin said slowly,
"You're not serious."
"Yeah, Duke. I begged my parents until they hired a dog trainer to find him in the woods and then work with them here. A woman. He still doesn't seem to like men very much." Griffin gave a short laugh.
"It's hard to think of Duke liking anyone."
After a pause, Cheyenne said,
"So how's it going at your aunt's house?"
"To be honest, I kind of feel like Duke. They all watch me out of the corner of their eye. They've signed me up for this high school for alternative students. It sounds like it will be me and the pregnant girls and the kids with drug problems."
But Griffin didn't sound bitter.
"If I have to do it, I figured I might get some of those recordings you talked about. You know, of books. See if they would help me read."
"That's good," Cheyenne said.
It was hard to talk. She had so many emotions, but they were mixed up so that she couldn't feel any one of them.
"A new year, a new you," she said lightly.
"Hey, if Duke can do it," Griffin said. "How about you? Do you have any New Year's resolutions?"
"Just one. Always to take Phantom with me."
Hearing his name, Phantom looked up and butted her thigh. Absently, she scratched him behind the ears.
"Everything would have been completely different if you had had your dog."
It was hard to read what Griffin was feeling. Was he thinking about what he had learned about his dad, or what he had learned about himself? Cheyenne knew that she would never be the same after what had happened.
"You're right. Things never would have turned out the way they did," Cheyenne said slowly. "But maybe that's okay."
"Cheyenne, are you about ready for lunch?"
her dad called from the living room.
Look, I've got to go, she said.
Can I call you again? Griffin said quickly. Cheyenne took a deep breath and thought about her answer.
We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of Girl Stolen by April Henry. Copyright 2010 by April Henry. Performed by Kate Rudd. Directed by Max Bloomquist. Engineered by Jeff Colnut. Performance copyright 2012 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Henry Holt & Company, LLC. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.